Welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast, guys. Very special conversation today. I've got John Young from Bigger. He won't mind me saying, though, he's not a special guest. He's just a regular guest. Our special guest is Stuart Griffiths, who is the course manager, head greenkeeper up at Blair Atoll and Pitlochry. During lockdown, Stuart made headlines by essentially a serious injury that put him at serious risk. And we're just going to have a catch up with Stuart, see how he's doing a couple of months down the line. Stuart, how are you doing, mate? You okay?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, thanks. Yeah, making good progress.
Good progress. What, come on, tell us, for those of us who don't know, what happened to you?
To be honest, I don't actually know, but I could sort of tell you the base of it. On the 25th of June, I literally that week got a member of staff back, so the two was out on the course. I was cutting tees on the golf course, and I was cutting one of the smaller tees on the course. We usually actually cut tees by hand, but obviously during furlough and lockdown, I decided to use a triple to cut tees, which most of the course was absolutely fine. One of the tees that I used that day is a little smaller tee. I'd sort of assessed it, and what I'd done was I decided not to cut the front of the tee because it was so narrow. I decided to actually cut half the tee, and then we would take a hand mower out just for time purposes. But on said day, I cut the tee, and I still have no idea how, but the mower went down the banking, and as it rolls down the banking, it just carried on, chucked me off the machine, and away I landed it, and it actually landed on top of me, crushing my legs under the machine and pelvis.
Wow, Al, you were awake this entire time, were you? Trapped?
Yeah, there's. I'm not a big believer in luck, fate and luck and things, but on that day, where the machine stopped and landed at the time, I just presumed it landed on top of me and you know, pinned me to where it was. It was on a very steep banking. But when I lay under the machine, the way my legs were, the story is that I always have my mobile phone in my right-hand pocket, right-handed, it's just easier to pull out. So I was obviously trapped. The way my legs were, my right arm was trapped, so I could only get my left hand out of my pocket. My phone, but actually my phone wasn't in the pocket. In my right-hand pocket, it was in my left-hand pocket. Machine had trapped my right-hand pocket, so if my phone had been there, I would never have been able to get it out. I've still got the mark where I've got like a burn mark on my leg where the machine had actually lay. But it was in my left-hand pocket, so I managed to make a phone call, but there was diesel dripping from the machine as well, so managed to make a call, and I phoned my one of the directors in the business, who's actually a retained firefighter. He's my first call. He actually answered the call, which is very unlike him. He's usually rubbish at getting back. So again, another stroke of luck that day. He answered him within 5 minutes. He was on site and got the fire crew up there immediately, which was very lucky.
So your first call was to your friend who's a volunteer firefighter. Why didn't you call an ambulance?
Because he is a retained firefighter, and his work base is like literally 3 minutes from site. So I knew that I really needed firemen and not ambulance at that time. I don't know how, I actually still have no idea how, you know, your way of thinking at that time. I've never been in a situation where, you know, I was in obviously a lot of pain, but I just thought for literally 2 seconds, I've got to phone the fire brigade. I needed, because I was, the severity of the bank, I wasn't sure if that machine was going to go any further. But then the next stroke of luck, I'll go on to now, was it actually landed on an old wooden fence post that, again, I landed about a metre and a half from a cliff.
Yeah.
So that fence post stopped the machine from traveling further down the edge of that.
I saw the pictures, and in a sense, you were very lucky. That was some shocking pictures.
Yeah.
You look back at them yourself?
I do. I did at the time. As soon as I got out and realised I'd only had a broken pelvis and other injuries, obviously felt relief, luck. But then when I got the picture shared to me, I actually couldn't believe how lucky I was. You know, I mean, I've probably used up every single ounce of luck that I could ever have to be on that day. So I did look at it, and I've looked at it a few times since then, but I'm through process of speaking to the trauma team in hospital, I've used that, and now I don't look at it anymore. I don't watch it anymore.
You got past that, essentially.
I passed that, yeah.
So what happened after you, so the fire crew comes, they, I presume they lift the machine off you, is that?
Well, no, but that's the point, is that where the machine lay on that fence post, I was trapped for an hour and 45 minutes. So because of the...
What goes through your head during that hour and 45 minutes?
To be honest, you know, I've never been in that situation before. By all accounts, I believed I was quite calm. But so, you know, I thought about obviously wife and children and things. And then I do remember lying there. Obviously, my friend, the fireman, he was there. He was the one that sort of kept me calm. And I was calm, to be fair. But he also tried to just relax me and stuff. And I did remember at one point thinking, you know, like, this isn't good for work purpose, as in, you know, having an accident at work. I do remember thinking about that, yeah. But you know, I was in a lot of pain, so you know, but they couldn't, the ambulance then arrived, they couldn't actually give me anything because it was too dangerous, so they had to stay behind because of the severity of the slope. So that's why it took so long. So they couldn't lift it off me because it was on that post. So basically what they had to do is to get me out at the very end. They decided when an ambulance arrived that they had to kind of dig me out. So they strapped to the machine, fire engines at the top, to take the weight off it, but they couldn't move the machine. So they had to, so behind me where I was lying down the hill, they actually dig the ground out and slide me out that way. So they used pressure bars just to lift the machine like millimeters or inches at a time. Yeah. And then when it was enough just to get me out, they slid me downwards. So yeah.
Yeah, and then you were obviously flown to hospital.
How long
were you in hospital for?
It took 17 minutes, I think. Whereas, you know, I live in the middle of the Highlands, so I would have to have gone to Nine Wells, so an ambulance would be, you're half an hour at Perth, then you're another half an hour, so it would be an hour.
Wow, and then, sorry, how long were you actually in hospital for?
Oh, right, I was in hospital for 13 days.
13 days.
Yeah.
When the rest of us are reading this news, it broke fairly quickly. It was quite, you know, it was quite shocking, to be fair.
Yeah.
We all know that people were acting on, you know, reduced staff and that sort of thing. John, as one of our regional guys up in Scotland, when you hear about an accident on a golf course, what do you do? What's your reaction? You know, do you kick it? Do you spring into action? What happens?
Quite difficult to spring into action on the basis that, because of locations of where you're based compared to where the individual's based, it really depends on how easy access it is. The other aspect of that is obviously the current situation that we're in, where we are not travelling as much because of what's going on in the world. But what we try to do on a regional basis, myself and all the colleagues, is to make contact as quickly as we can with somebody who is handy to Stuart, for example. You know, it might be a friend. I know a number of Stuart's friends who would really know the situation quite quickly. We would know where Stuart was. The difficulty, obviously, is when this was happening, I was actually on furlough, so you can't really just spring into action. But what we have, obviously, as an association, is the availability for Stuart to contact other members of staff, because we are a team. We don't need, Stuart's first point of call doesn't necessarily need to be me. We can contact anybody within Bigger. And I think that Stuart actually had that opportunity, and he spoke to a number of my colleagues while I wasn't available.
Okay, so the bigger team jumps into action and helps them out, and the volunteers. Stuart, what was the response from the sort of the greenkeeping world? Did they gather around you as we hear they will?
It was amazing that, you know, I've been a greenkeeper for 28 years, you know, and I've always found the industry great. You know, it's a great, it's a great family, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But after I think I arrived at the hospital around about 11 o'clock and I was put onto a ward about 1:30, 2 o'clock. And by, you know, I think I slept till maybe 7 or 8 o'clock in and out, and I was on morphine and stuff. And but when I woke, you know, it's hard to believe, you know, my first thought wasn't my phone, but the nurses came through with my phone, and I had like 50-60 messages, you know, it was just ridiculous. And it was most the first initial messages were obviously the greenkeepers who'd heard, and then it spread so quickly, and it was amazing. It was, you know, still to this day pretty overwhelming, to be honest.
That's brilliant. Yeah, isn't that great. You it's one of those things where you don't realize the importance of that you've even got a network until something like this happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's the so you, what did it happen? You broke your hip and your legs. What's the
What happened was I you know initially when I was under the machine, I could hear the guys were saying, look, you know, I didn't really have any movement in my feet, but that was probably down to the fact that the machine had been squashing my legs for nearly 2 hours. So a lot of the nerve pressure, my calf, one of the parts of the machine was trapping, the two calves were on top of each other. So all my feeling in my legs had just about gone.
Right.
But they didn't think it was spinal, so I kind of, that was a, you know, that was a lesser worry, to be honest. So when I got to hospital, checked me over, I had 4 breaks in my pelvis, and I had a broken coccyx bone, which was, that was the sorest. It still is. Yeah.
It's one of those where, how are you sitting down?
What right now, or
yeah, in general? Yeah,
no, I'm all right. I'm good at sitting. I'm good. I'm fine. They had put 3 pins in my pelvis and three plates in my pelvis and a pin in my coccyx bone. During the time when I was in hospital, they weren't actually the initial first few days. They weren't going to operate. They just said, look, we'll see how it goes and it'll heal. But the coccyx bone was too. It was causing me. And I couldn't move without them rolling me. And however good the nurses are, they don't roll at the same time. So it was like someone in the front, you know, the people holding my legs and people holding my back wasn't getting it. And it was just, it was awful. So in the end, the physio were brilliant, the trauma physio team were brilliant. And they noticed that I wasn't healing. So they said, right, we're going to operate. So once they pinned the coccyx bone, honestly, within 24 hours, it was such a difference. You know, I had more mobility, which was great. Pain was similar, but it was just much easier.
Tell it what's the, I mean, you're at home now.
Yep.
What's your road to recovery look like?
Well, I have a meeting next Wednesday with my surgical team, orthopedic team down in Perth next Wednesday. And then I have a meeting with the physio team after that. I'm still on crutches. I still need crutches. I can't walk without crutches. I could maybe go a couple of yards in the house, but that's my limit. So until next Wednesday, really, but I think I'll be very lucky if I'm back to work before like November. I think certainly, you know, it's all right going to work, but if I can't do 3/4 of the jobs, it's pointless going to work. You know, and the terrain at Pitlochry Golf Course was on, is obviously quite hilly ground. It'd be pointless.
Yeah, I can imagine even riding around on a workman or on a golf buggy is not going to be advised. Yeah. Well. So how have your work reacted?
Fantastic.
Yeah?
Fantastic. We have owner both sites. He on the day of the incident, he got called obviously to the site because it's actually his stepson who's director of, who's the fireman, retained firefighter. He's a director also of the business. He was called immediately, he came out. I didn't speak to him or, you know, I didn't really speak to anyone. I was getting looked after. But, you know, he phoned my wife. The police had already phoned my wife in the morning time and let them know about the accident. Then they arrived on scene. But then he came afternoon, visited my wife, reassured everything would be okay. You know, once they knew it was a hospital, they looked after. To be fair, work had been absolutely fantastic. Full support. Been great. And I've kept in correspondence on a daily, you know, with him. It's been great.
And has your bigger membership been able to help you out during this time?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, I mean, you said that, you know, you were speaking to John and asking him about how they sprung into action. Well, you know, after the really the first day, I then started to sort of get a bit more awake and, you know, spoke to just through messages and things. And then I checked my emails and there was an email from Elaine, you know, asking how, and then Sandra, and, you know, there was just, it was, you know, I've been in Biggar since I was, you know, 18, 17, you know, under the great Ian McLeod at Tain Golf Club. He got me enrolled in Biggar right at the start, you know, and I have been ever since. And you know, although I've fully backed them, you know, you never really think you're actually going to need them. But they were fantastic. You know, the correspondence has been brilliant, you know, and I can't thank them enough, to be honest. And they put me towards the insurance and, you know, the always asking how I am. It's been great.
Brilliant. That insurance, John, I hope I can hear you when you respond. That insurance, John, is just like Stuart says, is one of the things that Biggar members often don't realise they have access to. Is it your job as a one of our regional guys, do you raise awareness of these things for them? And is there anything else that maybe members don't realise they get that they could?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we discuss membership with any potential member and current members who don't know about it, that we try to make sure that they are fully aware of what they are entitled to. And the accidental insurance is one of those areas in which members can fully benefit from. Now, we hasten to add, it doesn't cover everything, as Stuart will attest to. Unfortunately, some parts of the body isn't part of the coverage, but it is something that can help members. Internally, you know, we will review it. We continually to review it and see what our benefits can assist members moving forward. And, you know, I'm not sure what we can do about that, but we can certainly take forward Stuart's case to see what that could add to. In addition, however, we obviously do have two other avenues that Stuart was pointed to. The Biggar Benevolent Fund, as we know, is our own internal charity. But I want to make this very clear that a lot of greenkeepers don't like asking for charity. This is not charitable donations to them. This is an assistance to get them back to where they need to get back to in their life. And we don't do it just to make it a point of an individual putting their hands out to get some cash. What we want to do is we want to assist them to get them back on their feet, specifically with Stuart, with his accident, for example. If there's anything that Biggar Benevolent Fund can do, then we will try to do that. And we want to make sure that greenkeepers know it's there because it's for them, not nothing else. The other aspect, of course, is we work very closely with Perennial, the horticultural charity. And as we speak just now, I have discussed this with Stuart and referred Stuart to Perennial, who will get in contact to see if they can assist. And I think that's two avenues. Again, I want to stress this really quite strongly. This is not a case of getting handouts. This is a case of getting something that you are entitled to as a member of Biggar. And everyone should feel that they can apply for those two things.
Come on, Thanks, John. The opportunities available to Biggar members are ridiculous, and we're always working on new ways to sort of promote that. I know we were talking about it yesterday. So much for us to do. Stuart, there's one person that's actually missing from this story. You said there was another greenkeeper working on the course at the time. Who did somebody tell him that something had happened?
What I did was I phoned him. The other part of the story, as I said, there was diesel coming out of the machine at the time. So using a touchscreen phone with wet hands, you may know, is not the easiest thing. So there was diesel. So I managed to phone the director, and then we had Greg, the retained firefighter. And then I thought, well, I need to phone Billy to see if he could help. Billy Hoggins, one member of my staff. So I actually somehow, I don't know how, managed to phone him, and he came. But I mean, there's... I knew there was nothing he could do. You know, I'm very fortunate. The other reason is that where the accident happened, if I had not been able to make a phone call that day, he wouldn't have known where I was, because it's not where the accident, where my machine lay, is not visible from the golf course. So he was cutting greens that day. So he would have had his earmuffs on. He would have, there was, you know, I'd already taken the flag out for him. There was no reason for him to stop the machine and get up, you know. So I often think about it that if I hadn't been able to make a phone call that day, there's no way he would have heard me. I wouldn't have, you know, and he would have been over two hours to where I was.
Yeah.
So, you know, lucky. I'm just lucky I could use my phone. So lucky.
After I'd heard about the accident with Stuart, the first contact I made with him, we kind of chatted about soul working. We know that a lot of greenkeepers in smaller environments do that quite a lot. One of the things that struck me about this whole scenario is, how do we help golf clubs with their practices on good soul working practices, for that matter, procedures? But also, you know, do we start to see if there's avenues of GPS technology or alert technology that we could work with, you know, the golf unions, the RNA, whoever it would be? Because I think that when you think about Pitlochry, and I've visited Pitlochry, and it can be quite a distance from, you know, the clubhouse to where people are working, you know, you really don't want to, you know, have somebody out there on their own for a period of time without some sort of alert system. So I think Bigger can maybe help to push that agenda as well.
Is there anything, Stuart, that you, will you, when you go back to work, will you change any of your working practices?
Certainly. I mean, as I said, you know, we were only using the triple on the tee. We always cut by hand because some of our tees are quite slopey. So obviously assessing risk, you know, that was being put in place before I even started. So we were quite happy to do that. You know, that's, but you know, it was hard times and strange times, and you know, with two men, you had to do what you had to do. You know, not that you know, certainly I wouldn't have allowed my member of staff to go on the tee, but you know, I trusted myself, but I still obviously don't know what happened that day. But yeah, we will look. We, you know, obviously we have health and safety currently in and things, and it all seems to be going. You know, looking at what we've done, and we had good practices in place anyway. We have a full time health and safety officer who meets a couple of times a year. We have health and safety booklets, staff sign. So we're quite tight on health and safety anyway. I think you have to look at your practices. You have to look at you know, there's never a stopping point. You know, health and safety is something you don't take lightly, so you have to look at it constantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think as well, just to interject, I think the other thing that Bigger can do as well, and maybe we don't have this out there as much, but through Stuart's membership, we are there to support the golf club and help them as well, as much as anything else, because obviously, you know, we recognise Stuart is employed by that company. And we want to make sure that we can work with them to make sure that Stuart has all the avenues that's open to him as well. And they need to know that.
Thank you. Just before we draw to a close, Stuart, is there any thanks you want to give? Are there any messages maybe you want to get this opportunity?
Don't think you've got enough time there, Carl. But I'll thank John and Bigger, first of all, and yourselves for the support I've had. It's, you know, I said it's really overwhelming. I never ever thought I'd be in this situation, but I am, and it's been a massive help. The greenkeepers out there, you know, there was one day where I had 64 messages, and I fell asleep. I actually fell asleep for like 20 minutes, and I was in the process of replying to someone, and when I woke up, there was like 75 messages. And, you know, and pretty much most of the guys from my industry. I'm quite active on Twitter. Guys who've I've never spoken to, don't even follow me, have sent me private messages. I mean, my Twitter feed's full, and it's just been amazing. So thanks to everybody. Yeah. And I have to say, probably thank you to the trauma team. The trauma team in Nine Mills Hospital were fantastic. They were brilliant.
Of course, you're in a difficult time.
You know, there's one person you haven't actually thanked, which is your wife as well, for the support.
Oh, no, yeah, good point, John. Good point. She's not here, thankfully, or I got an elbow in the ribs. Noah, well, yeah, wife and children. Do you know, one of the biggest traumas through the whole time was actually that what my wife went through that day. And we discussed that, and it was one of the things I did when I got home from hospital was that, you know, that she actually suffered trauma that day, having two policemen arrive at your door, telling that your husband's involved in a serious accident, you know, and had two young children at the time, she had to support them. So do you know what? You're spot on, John. Again, I'm a rubbish husband in a room. I've forgotten about my wife.
I just don't want you to get into trouble, Stuart. And I think
I'm always in trouble, John.
And just to say that as well, big as obviously there to support the family of the member as well, yep, during these times as well.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Stuart, for giving us an insight into what was
a
terrible day. But I'm glad you're on the mend. Yeah. Forward to seeing you on the course soon. John, thank you very much as well for joining us today and giving us insight into what we can offer. All right, cheers, gents. Thank you very much.
Cheers, girls. Cheers, John. Thanks. Bye.